Have you ever tried to break a bad habit and felt like you're climbing Everest in flip-flops? Yeah, we've been there too. But here is a breath of fresh air. Fume. It's not about giving up, it's about switching up. And Fume takes your habit and simply makes it better, healthier, and a whole lot more enjoyable.
Fume is an innovative, award-winning flavored air device that does just that. Instead of vapor, Fume uses flavored air. And instead of electronics, Fume is completely natural. And instead of harmful chemicals, Fume uses delicious flavors. So you get it. Instead of the bad, Fume is the good. It's a habit that you're free to enjoy and makes replacing your bad habit easy. Your Fume comes with an adjustable airflow dial and is designed with movable parts and magnets for fidgeting, giving your fingers a lot to do, which is extra helpful when you're trying to like de-stress and get rid of the anxiety and break your old habit.
Yes. They also taste great. It's like a refreshing herbal tea. And I love how they look. It's like this beautiful real wood, and the shape is very sleek and aesthetically pleasing. Plus, Fume's just released a magnetic stand for your Fume, so there's no more losing it around the home. It's built with fidgeting in mind. You can spin your Fume around on it.
Start the year off right with the good habit by going to tryfume.com/TGOG and getting the journey pack today. Fume is giving listeners of the show 10% off when they use our code TGOG to make starting the good habit that much easier.
Very spooky.
Okay, well, we're here. We did it. We succeeded in starting. Hello.
This is Two Girls, One Ghost.
Two Girls, One Ghost. And we are your ghostesses. That is Corinne. I am Hello. Sabrina. And this is the podcast where we suspend disbelief and totally believe in everything and anything. And
it's fun. Why wouldn't you want to do that? Great distraction from the world around us. Ghost stories are a part of our lives since we're children.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't we want to talk about monsters and fairies and ghosts and everything that could haunt us? And just perpetuate fear even more than it already is.
But also perpetuate blissfulness and peace and this beautiful stories and serenity that paranormal stories can provide us, especially if we've lost loved ones, if we've lost pets.
Yeah.
It is absolutely incredible how many messages our loved ones can pass on to us. And Corinne and I are of the mindset that if you've experienced something and you believe that what you have experienced is a paranormal encounter, then we too believe. And as long as no one's harming anyone, let's have some fun.
Let's have some fun. That's why we're here. That's why we gather every single week.
Let's take our tops off.
And it is fun. I feel like the community agrees. Take your socks off.
I said tops, but we could take socks off too.
I'm just thinking about, it feels so good when someone just like puts their fingers between your toes, you know? I call it flossing. Okay. Oh, so it's nice.
It's so gross.
What? I disagree. I like it.
That and the feeling of like something, someone putting their finger in your belly button is just.
Oh, the belly button. Horror. I'll never get over that. We've talked about this before on the podcast. It feels so bizarre. It feels so weird. But if you've never done it before, I think you have to, everyone, because you need to clean it out.
It's more for innies than for outies.
Oh, yeah. I forget that people have outies. I've just like lived with such a deep cavern in my stomach for so long.
Me too. I know nothing else.
You can have an end to it.
I truly don't think mine has an end.
Me neither. I think it goes straight into my liver.
Me too. And that's how it feels when someone touches it.
It does. Oh, ew. Scratching the inside. So gross.
Okay. Pivoting away from our lint-filled holes in our stomachs. Mm-hmm. I keep having dreams of you, Corinne.
Really?
And I keep waking up and I'm like, what was that about? And it was kind of paranormally like did that happen to you? Like I feel like I needed to ask you, but I can't remember what they are. It's just so strange.
So as soon as you wake up, you can't remember?
You know, like when you wake up from a dream in the middle of the night and you're like groggily falling back to sleep, it's in that period of time. So I'm like not fully conscious.
You need a journal by your bed so you can start writing them down. We can get to the bottom of it.
I think I need like a voice note journal. Like I just need to have my phone ready to voice note because
true.
I'm That's too tired.
to actually write. Yeah, it takes so much longer. You should. Or you should just like go into the text to me or even text yourself and just do the like speech to text.
That's a good idea.
Tell yourself what happened. I'm curious because, you know, I mean, I wake up a million times a night. There's bumps in the night.
Mm-hmm.
I usually blame them on the house, just like being a house and settling. But maybe you're astral projecting into my house. And
oh, what if I am?
We're just kind of hanging out together. Me awake and conscious, you asleep. Neither of us aware of what's going on.
Delusions. Galore. I actually had to last night. I slept at my neighbor Peggy's house because I was dog sitting for her. And it was the first time I've ever slept in her place. And all of these are built in the 1900s. So they're over 100 years old. And I was like, what if this place is haunted? And I slept up in her attic, probably, which is so cool and so well decorated. But nothing happened.
Is it a guest bedroom? How does she use her attic?
It is. It's like filled with books. I was gonna, you know what? Maybe I'll go record over there in her attic for the encounters that we record after this.
You should. Change of scenery.
Yeah, actually, I'll
do
that.
You need to ask every one of your neighbors if you can just like record in a spot in their cottage, because I feel like everybody is so cool in the area that you live in, and I feel like they'd be incredible backdrops.
Well, because the attic is filled with books and records, and the ceiling is really low. But it's beautiful, and it has this like spiral staircase that goes up to it. It's really cute. Okay, I'm going to do that.
Dreamy.
So that people know, Encounters 228, which I think comes out far after this episode.
Probably.
I don't know.
It's all around the same time that we're recording them because we have to. But for you guys, it'll maybe feel like it's far in the future. For us, it's in an hour from now.
I feel like people can piece it together timeline-wise based on like my changes of hairstyles. Because I've been going through
a lot.
That's
true. And neither of us really have consistency with our backgrounds either. Because I'm constantly moving from room to room around my house. Like whatever corner I can get in that's not being touched, I'll be in.
I'm constantly traveling.
I mean, I think we've seen the inside of a million Airbnbs at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm wearing my Vermont Beekeepers Association hat. My aunt got it for me long ago because we have this running joke that she always gives me something pertaining to bees. And so now for years and years and years, every time I get a gift from her, there's a bee sticker, a bee item, a bee journal, like something to do with bees. Yeah. But I promised you a while ago, Sabrina, you asked me to keep you abreast in all the like new lingo. And there is...
Oh, is there new?
Yes, it's semi-new. It's been around for a while, but I saw another video on TikTok yesterday with it. And I was like, oh, I should tell Sabrina about
this. Thank you so much.
So that if you hear it, you'll know. Okay, so you know the show Rick and Morty?
Yeah, I love it.
Okay, so there's an episode of Rick and Morty where there's a girl over and she's looking outside and she's seeing the dad working like on his beehive with all of his beekeeping gear on.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, wow, your dad is really hot. I want to bleep your dad, basically. So now from that clip, there's new lingo. Instead of saying someone's like a DILF or a hot dad or zaddy or whatever, people simply say he's of beekeeping age because that dad in that scene was a beekeeper.
Was a beekeeper.
So if you see a hot dad out there, you can say, ooh, he looks like he's of beekeeping age.
Okay, so that's so many words and so many syllables and so much more effort than daddy. Also, but daddy does give me the ick. So maybe,
yeah, I like certain just, people can we wear it well. Pedro Pascal, I think, is the only daddy that truly feels like daddy, you know?
Yeah, because it's like he's hot, but then also like if he's unattainable, I'd also like him to be my father.
Right, he's everything. He's the whole package. Whatever piece of Pedro Pascal you can have for yourself, you want.
Yeah.
You want to take it.
You just store it in your pocket.
Although I do love there's an interview where he's talking about, and I cannot remember their name, but the person who plays that girl on that show.
They are also in Game of Thrones.
Who did they play?
They were the, like a badass soldier.
Oh, shit. I didn't know that. Anyway, there was an interview with them and someone asked them about what they thought about Pedro Pascal calling himself daddy or other people saying that he's like daddy, he's zaddy or whatever.
And they were like, honestly, I feel like in our relationship, I'm more of the dad to him. Which is so funny because they're like, what, 19 years old?
20, yeah. Okay, Bella Ramsey.
There we go.
They were Lyanna Mormont in Game of Thrones.
I never finished it.
Anyway, I love that. There are certain people who are much younger and just give off daddy vibes in the sense that, like, you know, they'll take care of you.
Yeah.
Okay, so beekeeper vibe.
Beekeeping age.
Beekeeping age.
Yes.
Could we shorten it to, like, that's a beekeeper?
I mean, we could. Will Gen Z and the rest of TikTok follow in the vernacular we're trying to kind of pivot to? Probably not.
Probably not.
But I wanted to teach you that.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I'm up to date now. I can say.
Now you know everything.
I know.
Which is so funny because there's been multiple things that you have said, and I've shown you TikToks after because I'm like, oh, you must have seen a reel. You must have heard someone talk about this. But you just catch the wavelengths that, like, exist in the ether. Like when you were calling Mariska Hargitay mommy and you were like, why is everyone talking about Mariska Hargitay and calling her mommy? And this was like weeks after you'd said it. And I was like, wait, did you not know that that was already a thing when you said it? But like, you just pick up on it. And then there was this one reel, I sent it to you, and it was like, here's like what the cool kids are asking for Christmas. And you had already done all of them. You're a trendsetter. It just comes to you naturally. Like, you're picking up on the vibes, you're doing it without having, I have to research. I need someone to break it down for me in a video. You just exist that way.
Yeah, but I'm sure I'm influenced somehow and I just am not aware of it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, here's something that I did have to research, but kind of somewhat new in the zeitgeist. A conspiracy, or many conspiracies, if you will.
Okay, I'm ready for it.
So, we've heard stories where there are weapons of mass destruction being stored beneath malls or spaces that are said to hold importance to the Illuminati. Or, you know, places that are fronts for something a bit more sinister, malicious, or covert than we could imagine. Well, what if I told you there was a singular place in the United States where, Corinne, you and I have both been, where there are underground tunnels, secret societies, mysterious murders, hidden government agencies, aliens, spaceships, secrets, curses, and so much more?
I would believe you because I felt it.
We were on tour, and our final show was in Denver, Colorado. And so on November 12th, 2023, the early mornings, we flew into Denver International Airport in preparation for our final show of the Two Girls, One Ghost Conjuring House Fall Tour.
Here we go. I'm representing. Got this special.
Yeah, you are. We get there. We arrive. We're groggy. We're sleepy. And we notice there's quite a lot of construction. But we both couldn't help but chuckle when we saw a construction sign. And we'll insert the picture here into our YouTube channel. In this photo, there is a lizard person in a construction outfit. And this is like a billboard, basically, on the side of a construction wall.
Inside of the airport.
Inside the airport, yes. There's a lizard person in a construction outfit. And it says, apologies for the noise. It takes really big drills to get to the underworld.
An admission or a joke? That is the
question.
Or
a very coy way of leaning into conspiracies that exist in order to be like, look, that we're playing along with this joke. It's not real, but it actually is.
Right. And then they can be like, well, we told you when we all figure it out eventually.
We admitted it. Okay. So Denver International Airport is a freaking charcuterie board of conspiracies and mysteries. And I get it. And yeah. I don't know if it's a weird coincidence of all these things that had happened.
It can't be. They're doing weird shit there. You're going to get into it. I'm getting frustrated.
Oh, we're going to
get into it. But like the designs and all of the different structures and statues and just like weird shit. It's like, why the fuck would anyone do that?
Okay, well, we'll digest it at the end. But there are so many different conspiracies and there are so many that all don't go hand in hand with one another that I'm like, you're spinning my head round and round. Corinne, you and I have been loving A Court of Thorns and Roses and craving Fantasy World to devour, which is so exciting that we are sponsored by Dipsy because they've got you. Dipsy is an app full of hundreds of short, spicy audio stories, and you can dive into spicy enemies to lover tales or embark on an epic romance between immortal fae and sworn foes. They've got fantasy romance stories perfect for your morning walk, late night, or your long bath.
We love a slow burn. And there's a growing library of fantasy series with werewolves, with Greek gods and goddesses, with Regency era historical fiction, and plenty of fairy smut for us to explore the bounds of our pleasure. New content is released every week, so in between listening to your favorite stories again and again, you can always find something new to explore, and Dipsy offers a modern approach to romance through high quality and captivating audio fiction.
It is the happily ever afters you crave, all brought together beautifully in a very well-produced, spicy story and stories. They have, you know, they're soundscaped, they're immersive, there's realistic characters. I feel like it is the perfect escape. And also they're really, really hot stories. I'm like, okay.
For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/TGOG. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipseastories.com/TGOG. dipsystories.com/TGOG.
Denver International Airport saw more than 77.8 million passengers in 2023. So that's an average of 213,254 passengers daily. Mm. It is the third busiest airport in the world, and it is also the most conspiracy-filled place, not just airport, we've ever heard of.
Which, again, you're going to get into the details of what is in there, but being someone who has seen it and existed within it, it does freak me out that we have all of that symbolism and whatnot in the third most visited airport in the world. It does feel intentional. It doesn't feel like this kitschy little joke that Denver has.
Right, right.
Especially because the residents don't seem to be in on it either.
Well, I'll get to it. Like in the beginning, residents were the first to be like, this is strange. Why are you
doing this?
Okay, so I'm going to preface this episode with, similar to how we opened this episode, there's not a lot of proof of a lot of these conspiracies. It's a lot of hearsays, a lot of conspiracy, a lot of hypotheses and proposed evidence. So I'm not stating that there are secret organizations being operated outside of Denver International Airport. I am simply regurgitating information that already exists on the internet and allowing us to suspend disbelief for just a moment and live in this, and also maybe leave this episode potentially being like, sus.
And I appreciate you giving that warning because I feel like we have to have it so that we're not one of those people who just disappears after speaking about something.
That is a good point. And that is exactly why I said it.
Yeah. Air quotes throughout all of this, you know.
Yes.
It's a theory. It's make believe, maybe.
If we go missing, look for us in the tunnels of Denver International Airport.
Or don't save yourself while you can. Leave us.
Send the whole Phantom crew into Denver International Airport. Okay, everyone, adorn your Ghost Girl hats and look for us. So I have traveled to and from Denver many a times. And so throughout the years, I've learned some of the legends and some of the lores. And then, like Corinne, you were saying when we were there, like you see it. It's impossible not to see. They very much have leaned into these conspiracies. The art and the structures are so odd that it's hard to ignore.
Well, I mean, are you going to start with the one that you see when you enter the airport?
Well, which one are you talking about? Because there's a lot of things that you see when you get into the airport.
Well, the horse.
Oh, that's going to be like the last one.
Okay. But basically, every inch of your journey into or on this property leaves you being like, what?
And
what
why?
Is that?
Basically, from cursed art to mysterious organizations that are housed beneath the facility, we are going to dissect and conspire and gather here today to do just that. Okay, so Denver International Airport, DIA, as people nickname it, or that's like the airport code, currently very openly leans into the conspiracies, which if you ask me, And it's kind of the perfect cover. Like, look at us. Haha, laughing along with you. How silly. Conspiracies? Mm-hmm. What conspiracies?
Totally not true. Just for fun, right?
All the while, they're opening portals to other worlds right beneath your feet as you hop on a plane to get a sunburn in Aruba or visit the moose in Canada. I can't not say meese. I know meese is wrong, but it's frustrating that
you want to say it.
Is geese. Yeah. Or as you travel internationally and annoy foreigners with your American accent.
That's when you say, I'm from Canada.
Eh?
Sorry.
In this episode, we're going to look at the various conspiracies, curses, and stories that surround the ever-mysterious Denver International Airport, attempt to dissect their origins, the evidence, and then we can decide ultimately whether or not they are true.
Okay.
I can confidently say that this episode is just scratching the surface, and I probably have not properly captured every conspiracy that exists within this dimension because I don't think it's possible. So I'm going to begin first with history and some facts about Denver Airport itself. Denver International Airport is an international airport that occupies 33,531 acres, making it the largest airport in the Western Hemisphere and the second largest on Earth. The runway is 16,000 feet long, making it the longest public-use runway in North America. It is 25 miles outside of downtown Denver and is relatively new. Relatively.
Mm-hmm.
It was initially scheduled to open on October 29th of 1993, but there were so many construction delays and airline issues that pushed the opening day almost 2 years to February 28th, 1995, meaning that in 29 years, this airport has become the most salacious and conspiracy-filled buildings in the United States. And the conspiracies began before construction even did.
That's saying something. If before the if there was some weirdness in the air and with the planning process from the very beginning, that people already started talking about conspiracies before they erected all the weirdness for us to witness inside, that it's like, I mean, I don't want to disappear, but if I put on my conspiracy hat, I would be like, this feels like there's some real truth to it.
We should, for episodes like this, have tinfoil hats that we put on.
We should. Wait, let's do that next time.
So according to a New York Times article, people were suspicious years prior to DIA even opening, because in the late 1980s, there was a proposal for a new airport to replace the Stapleton International Airport that already served Denver. So many people were like, why? Why do we need a new airport? This one's already here. And I guess basically they wanted to expand upon the airport, make it larger. And then the proposed new location was much further away from Denver. It technically wasn't even in Denver, and it's in a very remote location where there's never been construction or anything built before. Why? People were like, that's odd. It's a beautiful location. It's surrounded by the stunning snow-capped mountains. But people were like, we don't even need a new airport, let alone why move it such a far distance away?
True.
So this began whisperings. What are they up to? Are they trying to hide something?
How deep are they digging?
And this could easily be written off. So I'm going to kind of, as I go through these conspiracies, talk about why we could rationalize them.
Okay.
Basically, it wasn't easy to find such a vast amount of open space upon which you could build an airport. And there was a lot of concern. So some people were like, why not just add on to the Stapleton International Airport, which already existed? One, there were like a lot of neighborhoods surrounding that airport. And so there was a lot of concern about what construction would do. One, sound-wise, and then also traffic-wise.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think they ultimately decided, because of all these complaints and concerns, it would just be easier to start from scratch. And there also were a lot of, like, air traffic control issues with the runways and weather issues and delays that they wanted to construct new runways.
That does make sense, though. My question is, do we know what happened to the old airport? What it's used for, or did we simply just create all of this man-made trash and then leave it there?
It's like, I don't know. I didn't look that up.
That's okay. That's a question for all of our local Denver listeners.
Yes, let us know. Once construction began, more controversy was stirred up because construction was continuously delayed. And I think that's a typical thing. Anyone who's done even a house project knows it takes way longer than you anticipated. They give you a timeline, and then you're like, oh, actually, it's going to be 3 more months than they said. FAA regulations were blamed, but then there were multiple construction workers who were like kind of trying to whistleblow, and they were complaining of working on strange projects.
Ooh, I didn't know this.
So then again, this is a lot of hearsay. I couldn't find specifics, but construction workers were pretty much shown like very small portions of projects. Then they were assigned, you're going to do this, but they wouldn't ever know what the whole picture of what they were working on was. They were instructed to build vast networks of tunnels underneath what would be the airport without any understanding of why. Workers would whisper during breaks, and slowly people started piecing together their various projects, and it felt as if they were building a major city underground, or at least the foundation for a major city, not for an airport.
Well, I wonder if they were all struck with NDAs after there was this piecing of things together. Maybe they thought they could get around it, or it's just like, here's your one project, here's your one project. But then people started to whisper, and that's why we don't have the full story now. It's just rumors.
That's interesting. I don't know.
Another conspiracy on top of the conspiracy.
This whole episode is conspiracies on top of conspiracies. And it's like, I'm sure I could dedicate my entire life to understanding and unraveling this entire airport and the conspiracies and like finding sources of like when this was said and when that was said to try to understand if it was like said before or if like these are all after the fact comments.
Yeah.
Anyway, there was one worker that noted that there was an unorthodox amount of fiber optic lines being used and that they were utilizing Teflon coated fiberglass in the underground development that would counteract any ground penetrating radar. So basically like something to disguise what was being underneath.
It's an invisibility cloak.
Yes. I did read a little bit about the architecture and the architect's planning of this project. Mm-hmm. And I think because when, and we'll get to this in a second, but like when you look at the design of the building, it is very unique. And I think they had to incorporate some more advanced, different construction technologies in order to build it the way that it is.
But also, I mean, I feel like that's a lot of unnecessary money being spent. So it was their goal to kind of just like have one of the most unique buildings, or was it to create a functional airport? Because it seems like it doesn't make sense, the choices that they're making and the amount of money that they're spending just to create an airport.
Sure. But if you're an architect and it's your passion and your art, I understand, you know, hey, this is my project. This is what I want to do. And this is how I'm going to do it.
Right. But then they're not the one approving the budget though, or the money. Oh, somebody else
is. It is wild how over budget they get. Keep in mind, DIA was built between 1993 and 1995, far before the September 11th terrorist attacks and far before security advancements in regard to air travel. So like all of this underground, like radar protection, all of these things weren't necessary. Like it wasn't in response to trying to make air travel safer.
Okay.
Because that was my first thing. I was like, oh, is this just like they're trying to be really advanced and safe and make sure that like nothing can get by them. But I don't think that that was really a factor.
Yeah, especially because they're such a huge airport and they have so many people going through. You would think that that would be something that they, and maybe they do consider it.
Sure.
It's just not a part of this conversation.
So upon completion, they were $2 billion over budget.
What the fuck?
At first, I thought it said 2 million. And then I was like, wait a second. I have to count these zeros. 2 billion.
That's upsetting to me. We don't need all that extra stuff at the airport. Like, use that for something else.
Anyway, despite being built to expand upon the already existing airport that was the Stapleton International Airport, for some reason, DIA had less runways than Stapleton did, which people were like, that's odd. I can explain that in a second, but I'm just going to plant that there. Okay. Why build a massive new airport with fewer runways that is further away from the city center? Never mind any suspicions, the airport was completed and ready for business and officially opened on February 28, 1995. And on opening day, they decided to bury a time capsule and erect a dedication stone to commemorate the big day. What is contained within the time capsule is not fully clear. What I do know, there was like a credit card, a Colorado flag, and some newspapers from the DIA opening day. But then everything else is a mystery. until 2094.
That's when we crack it open again?
That's when we crack it open. Atop the buried time capsule is a dedication stone that has also stirred the conspiracy stew.
Wait, can I interrupt for a second? Mm-hmm. I just got so sad because I realized we're going to be dead. We're not going to find out what's in the time capsule. We're 93, baby. So unless you and I are both 101 years old.
Which we could be.
Maybe.
I don't know I want to be, but we could be.
I'm kind of having an existential crisis right now.
If we travel to the planet Lanulos and come back.
That's true.
Maybe we could.
Okay. All right. Well, someone's going to have to break out a Ouija board and let us know what comes out in 1994. Oh,
and if you youngins listening to us, please remember to speak to us when we are dead via the Ouija board.
Yeah. Give us all the gossip. We need regular tea sessions where you tell us everything that's going on.
We need to know all the new lingo.
Yeah. The campfire stories is still going to happen, but it's you guys contacting us every Tuesday night. It's happening.
Oh my gosh. We have to pass the torch to a new generation on our deathbeds, because I know that we will obviously be doing this podcast and campfire stories until literally the day we die. And they will every Tuesday.
We give them the ghost girl hats. That's the passing of the baton.
I dub thee the new ghost girl. Oh, I just got chills. Kind of like that. Ooh. Who doesn't love to save money? And recently, we both signed up for Rocket Money, and it was amazing how much...
It was eye-opening.
It was so eye-opening.
That's what it was.
I was, shocked at how many subscriptions I was paying for that I forgot about. And now I also just feel like I can monitor my expenses in a really, really easy-to-understand way. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings.
With Rocket Money, you have full control over your subscriptions and a clear view of your expenses because, you know, sometimes things slip up and we are like, wait, why did I pay for that twice? Or I had no idea I was still subscribed to that thing that I haven't used for 3 years. Yeah. That's why Rocket Money is so useful. They even try to negotiate to lower your bills for you by up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill and Rocket Money will take care of the rest. And they deal with the customer service for you. So you don't have to call, which I'm so happy about.
Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year while using all of the app's features. Truly, I'm checking it weekly just to make sure I'm monitoring my expenses. They make it easy. They send you a summary every week into your email. It's like, this is how you spent. This is where you spent more money than last week and how to be conscious of it. It's just so convenient.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/TGOG. That's rocketmoney.com/TGOG. rocketmoney.com/TGOG.
Okay. So this dedication stone has stirred the conspiracy stew quite a bit. On this dedication stone, which if you're watching our YouTube channel, there is a photo here that you can look at. There is the Freemason symbol, which is the Freemason square and compass. It also mentions the New World Airport Commission, which, as far as anyone knows, does not exist. Apparently, someone said something similar did exist and maybe this is a typo, it no longer exists. But listen, we could do a whole other episode on the Freemasons group because there are so many conspiracies about them. I think there's conspiracies of basically the New World Order and world domination. And there are three main conspiracies about the Freemasons group. But basically, in summation, without getting so down that nitty gritty rabbit hole, a lot of prominent figures in history have been members of the Freemason Society. George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, FDR, Gerald Ford, so many. There are conspiracy theories. The three main are about political control, satanic worship, cultural takeover, basically kind of like the Illuminati and instilling their beliefs through pop culture and all this stuff without us fully acknowledging.
Good old subliminal messaging.
Exactly. So throughout history, people have theorized that the Freemasons was one and the same as the New World Order, as in they were working to seek world dominance.
calling something New World blank does feel very sinister, doesn't it? It's like they're planning something which in the beginning you would have to destroy the world as it is
in order
to then be reborn as the New World. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Makes me scared.
Sus. So it's odd that on this dedication stone, there is the Freemason symbol and a combo of the New World. Granted, it says Airport Commission, but it is odd that those two things are on this dedication symbol because the Freemasons did not build this airport. So why are these on the dedication stone? Why are they being connected to the airport that's already kind of stirring up some conspiracies and some questions from the people of Denver and of the greater world?
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, the Freemasons did gift the stone to the airport. So that is why their artistic signature, I guess, if you would like to say, is on it. Or perhaps the Illuminati and the Freemasons and the New World Order control the DIA airport and there are lizard people living underground in the tunnels.
I believe. What's the purpose of them giving the Denver airport a gift? Do they do that sort of thing regularly?
I think they do that. I don't think that was like that weird. But basically, in addition to this small detail, I will say that there are so many places in the airport itself where there are more symbols of the Illuminati, of aliens. Strange oddities are seen throughout the airport, in art in the airport. And adding to this suspicion is, so basically, they said that all these underground tunnels were built to help support this brand new, state-of-the-art, new age technology of baggage transportation. On opening day, they launch this like new baggage system. And as bags start coming out onto the conveyor belts, it is chaos. It's like Smart House went insane in the movie where Smart House attacks. Like, the bags are being thrown off the conveyor belts. They're flying across the terminals and around baggage claim. They're being shredded to pieces.
What?
And they stop using this new technology because it failed.
My God.
So some people are like, is that actually a cover that they never actually wanted to use that, but they had to have like a accident to make it be like, this is why we're no longer using this anymore. Mm. So now we can use the tunnels for what we're actually trying to use them for.
Smart. I mean, especially if they came out on opening day, like, come on, really? Like, they didn't test it before opening day. It wasn't working before opening day.
But I will say it does remind me of like when Disneyland first opened and it was one of like the most sweltering days and they had not nearly enough water. People's shoes, like high heels, were literally sinking into the pavement because it was so hot. Like, you know, I think opening day does
Fire Fest
reveal a lot of things that are not prepped properly.
Or all the times, not all the times, the couple times during tour where you would have to sneak back onto the stage to fix some tech issue. And you were like, I am not here. Pretend the show starts in 60 seconds.
In addition to these small details, there are some more glaringly in-your-face oddities about the Denver International Airport. And I'm going to start with two that I think are commonly thought of as conspiracies. And I really do think, for me at least, they're easy to be explained. But also, that being said, why do I have to constantly explain things away? There's too many things happening at this airport. So the first, the architecture of Denver International Airport is pretty iconic and recognizable. The roof is a 240,000 square foot tent that is held up by 34 different masts and large enough to cover more than 4 football fields. Those who are looking for evidence to back up the conspiracy of the Illuminati or that the airport is run by secret organizations have pointed to these tents, these triangle-like shapes that are the roof of the airport, as a sign and a symbol of the Illuminati. Others believe it's a secret message to aliens that only if you're in space and seeing it from above that you can understand.
It also kind of, it looks like a circus too. So it also makes me think that it's like, I guess like one of the theories could be, were all these spectators not taking it seriously enough? Because we feel like it's just entertainment. We're just there to be entertained. And so we have this different lens or this different view, and we're not really looking at what's happening underneath the tent.
Sure. But I will say, when I was reading about the architect, I very much actually appreciate this because the architect, Jim Bradburn, actually wanted the architecture to acknowledge and be sympathetic to the original inhabitants of the land, the Native American tribes.
Oh, okay.
Before the airport was built, like, this land was pretty much open space and had at one point in time been land that was owned and inhabited by the Native American tribes. So he envisioned this imagery of white teepees, white tents rising out of the landscape in a way that perhaps they did at one point.
Yeah.
The second aspect of the airport in terms of construction and architecture and the way it appears that it has come into question are the runways. If you remember, I said there are less runways at this airport than there were at the old airport, the Stapleton mm-hmm. International Airport. And people were like, what's going on? Why? And then apparently, if you look at it from a Google map view, it appears to be in the shape of a swastika.
What the fuck? I gotta look this up. I didn't know this part. Ugh!
I can see it, but it is a little bit of a stretch. And there's a reason.
Why?
It wasn't a choice. I think it's like one of those things where, like, first of all, when they're building it, they're probably not looking at it from a Google like maps view. And it's also like not perfectly like that. But with Stapleton International Airport, one of the biggest issues was because the runways ran parallel and were in the same direction, if there was any type of weather or wind changes and shifts, all the runways would be impacted in the same way. Mm. So with DIA, they built runways kind of like going this way, all directions, so that there were multiple options for both landing and takeoff for flights.
Right. Okay. Yeah, it does make sense. And also looking at a picture of it, like when I look at it and people draw with a line over Google Maps, I'm like, oh my God, it's a swastika. But then when I see something like this drawing that's right. online, I'm like, okay, this looks like a satellite.
Exactly.
Or a windmill.
It's a stretch. It's one of those things where, like, I could put a shape over something and be like, look, it somehow kind of fits.
I sure hope, yeah, there's no actual real intention behind that.
And then this is the thing. It's like, how many can, like, now at this point, we're saying this is run by the Illuminati. Potentially aliens are existing. Some hidden city is under the building. And it has Nazi affiliations. Like, I'm sorry.
There's too many things stacked.
It's too many things. But if I am trying to hide one thing, I would want to plant a mystery of many things so that one thing is better hidden.
Right. And especially things that get people really heated. And so they get distracted arguing about one specific thing.
Right. Exactly. So basically, those are like the two exterior appearance conspiracies. But there is also a belief that DIA is the headquarters for an underground government. So like I said, there are various networks of underground tunnels that were said to have been built for the complex baggage system, but then abandoned because the system failed. Many believe it was all a cover-up and that the underground tunnels lead to their different conspiracy. There's a couple different ideas and hypotheses of what it could lead to. Mm-hmm. One, there's a belief that it is the headquarters for an underground government, perhaps connected to the New World Order and the Freemasons. There is a legend that there were 5 buildings that were built during construction of DIA, and they were initially built above ground, but almost immediately were deemed built improperly or unable to use. And instead of demolishing them or knocking them down, they buried them.
None of that makes sense to me.
Me neither.
You're spending how much money and that many buildings go wrong? That seems like there should be a lawsuit against some construction company, against some architect, and there's none of that. Instead, they just go, oopsie, we'll just move it underneath the earth and then everything's fine.
Also, if you're already building all these underground tunnels, why not just build these buildings underground to start with, you know? Like, why go through the effort of building them above ground and then burying them? That's so much more work.
Well, yeah. How much more money is it to bury them? Like, did they take them apart? And like,
no
idea. I don't know.
Again, no real proof or evidence, conspiracy. There is a sub-conspiracy here that exists within this like underground government that basically says that these tunnels, when government officials pass away, that their bodies are kind of taken through these tunnels and taken to like a chamber where they're actually being stored cryogenically, in case we can bring people back. I'm kind of down for that one.
Yes, but do we need those people to be the ones that are brought back to be in charge? I think it's...
Listen.
I'm going to say no. I think we go with the people of the future who have an understanding and are about 50 years younger.
You know what it kind of reminds me of is in Interstellar when Matthew McConaughey and his daughter find that like secret NASA base.
Yeah.
And they realize that the entire base is actually could be a spaceship.
Yeah, that's interesting. This is making me think of The End of the World too, that movie.
Yes, definitely.
Or no, not sorry, not The End of the World. Don't Look Up.
Oh, Don't Look Up. What's The End of the World? Is that the comedy one?
That's the comedy one where that one guy is right?
I think.
Now I'm thinking of Neighborhood Watch. I don't freaking know. It exists.
Okay. A second theory about these tunnels is that they are actually leading to an underground bunker and that underneath DIA is a bunker in case of the end of the world. And it is fully stocked and fully prepped for the apocalypse.
Okay, so here's an interesting thought. If this is an airport that is able to receive an immense volume of people every single day, and they have created these crazy structures and seemingly endless tunnels underneath, do you think that this could be basically like less of like a selfish, oh, this is our bunker and our government conspiracy, and more of a, in case of emergency, we would be able to house as many people as possible underneath here? God forbid something happens.
I would love that to be the case, and I hope, but I can't imagine that our government is that selfless.
Right. And also, how close is Denver to the fault line that's on the West Coast?
I don't know.
I'm thinking earthquakes now. Like, that's a lot
of course.
Structures to keep underneath.
So there's this conspiracy that it's fully prepped as a bunker and people could survive there in case of the apocalypse. But then there's a theory that kind of goes along with this, that actually whoever created DIA, whoever's behind all of this, actually is aware of an apocalypse oncoming.
Okay, not to get even more conspiracy, but like the talk of the internet is how all of these billionaires are creating these massive underground bunkers for themselves on their properties.
Well, yeah, if you have all the money in the world, sure, why not do that?
Yeah, I would too. Let's be real. If I had about five more pennies, I would find a way to put a bunker in my backyard.
Right. Okay, so there's some artwork in the Denver International Airport that seem to back up this theory. There is an artist named Leo Tinguma whose work is displayed in the airport. I think there are multiple pieces, but there are two specific murals in the DIA baggage claim area that are quite strange to see in an airport. Hmm. One is called Children of the World Dream of Peace, and the other is In Peace and Harmony with Nature. And we can put two photos here side by side as they are displayed in the airport on our YouTube channel. But the content within these paintings are horrifying. They are plagued with death. There are death-masked soldiers with guns pointed at children. There are dead animals. It looks like the world is destroyed. So some people are like, why is this in the airport? Unless you know something. Perhaps you are pointing to the fact that the end of the world is imminent and oncoming, and you know. And the artist himself has said that the art depicts children sleeping amid the debris of war as if to imply they are dreaming of a better future and dreaming of peace. But it is a bit disturbing for that to be displayed in an airport.
Right. It doesn't feel like an appropriate choice to expose the masses to.
Right.
Without their awareness. Like, it does feel kind of like it's better for an art exhibit and not someone who's maybe, like, I'm thinking about just all the people with like PTSD from war too. Like, imagine just like walking through there and
seeing that.
Yeah. Being at an airport and flying is already scary enough for people. But like, that does seem like maybe not the best place for some messaging like that.
Here's what's even more confusing to me is whoever was in charge of commissioning the art and the artwork for the Denver International Airport.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine that all of these artists are in on the conspiracy.
Oh, so it's like, yeah, the person is sourcing things specifically with some imagery that will add to it. But it's not about the artists themselves. It's just they create these pieces and whoever is the art director is taking them, choosing them intentionally.
Or like, how do I even put this? It's like, It's such an odd coincidence that all of these artists who are commissioned to make art for this airport somehow seem to mentally be in this place where their art is depicting such dark, disturbing imagery and ideologies that are leaning into the conspiracy even more, where it's like it feels too coincidental that it's either they're picking up on something in the air, they're being directed by someone who knows something, or this person just has a very disturbed interest in art. I don't know.
But then it's like, who approved that? Like, all these things, it doesn't lean on one person, right? Like, any decision that's made for a corporation or a huge project like this, it's not like one person is like, you're in charge of art. And that guy just like freely goes about and is like, I want that piece. I want that piece.
Right.
Puts it up. There is a vetting process. There are huge groups of people that have to approve all of these choices.
I know. Well, that's the other thing that makes me not like, that makes it hard for me to believe that there's such a conspiracy going on here, because how can that many people be in on it and it not be so openly talked about? Like, we would have more evidence and it would be way more like, oh yeah, I know 100% this is what's going on, if that many people were involved in it.
Yeah, it's hard because it's like the conspiracy theorist in me is like, well, you know, is there a list of people and their involvement in this project? And then if someone provided me that list, I'd be like, well, is that just a front? Are these just aliases? Were these people bought off and say that they worked on the project, but it was actually a whole nother group? Like, I feel like my brain, my tinfoil hat is on and I could just really spiral here.
Well, that's the thing, is like, you can come up with so many different reasonings for all of these things, which is why, you know, we can do this. This is why there are so many different conspiracies surrounding this airport, because it's so easy to like pick up on all of these small little things and be like, well, what about this? But back to the tunnels, there is belief that if this secret government is being overly prepared for the end of days, whether or not they are predicting it, that they are also ready to protect themselves should they need to, with weapons of mass destruction and biological warfare.
Don't you just hate when you're lying in bed and it feels like eternity has passed and you're tossing and you're turning and you're just like desperate to find the ideal position? But this podcast is sponsored by Stellar Sleep. So if that's something that you experience, we highly recommend you check this out.
If you have sleep problems, big or small, you need to try Stellar Sleep. Stellar Sleep revolutionizes how chronic insomnia is treated, offering the very first digital solution to all your sleep issues, which is amazing because you don't have to like go into a sleep study. You can log in online, and their focus is on sleep psychology. So it helps tackle your insomnia at the source and figure out what's causing it. So it's not like, hey, cut back on caffeine. It's more like, no. What's truly at the root cause of your insomnia?
One of my old coworkers was telling me about it because her husband had signed up for Stellar Sleep because he was in his 40s. They had kids, they had stressful lives and jobs, and there was just so much. And he hadn't slept in like decades at this point. And so he used Stellar Sleep and she was like, I cannot tell you the difference and how quickly this made a difference for him. Wow. It was such a big deal. And it makes sense because in a clinical assessment of 500 people, 80% of Stellar Sleep users significantly improved their sleep, which on average led to 74 minutes of additional sleep time.
Learn how to sleep again with Stellar Sleep. Head to stellarsleep.com/TGOG for your free 7-day trial and then just $99 per year. Plus, you can cancel anytime within the first 30 days for a full refund. Once again, that's stellarsleep.com/TGOG for your free 7-day trial and then just $99 per year. There are two things that back this up, or two legends. So there is an inlay on one of the floors in DIA that feature the letters AU and then separately right next to it AG. They're side by side, and it is said to interpret and be a nod to gold and silver and like the Wild West and the gold rush and all of that in
Makes sense
Denver.
For the area. Totally.
But another interpretation that is a little bit more sinister is that these letters represent two dangerous strains of hepatitis that could be used as a biological weapon and destroy Earth, basically.
And what better place to release them than one of the most traveled airports with people coming from all over the world.
Yeah.
And not just coming to stop in Denver, but continuing on their journeys.
Flying other places, yeah.
Yeah, a connecting airport.
There's also a theory that these tunnels actually run hundreds of miles, connecting all the way to NORAD, which is the North American Aerospace Defense Command, which basically is this idea that these chambers in these tunnels have access to weapons of mass destruction and they're being stored underneath. And, you know, that kind of leads into the theories of malls. Yeah. Like underneath malls are these bunkers and chambers where all of these weapons are being held.
I'm going to look up where NORAD is because I thought it was very far from.
I mean, this is hundreds of miles, so.
Yeah. Oh, they do have a headquarters at the Peterson Space Force Base near Colorado Springs. So I guess there's still multiple.
Hundreds of miles.
Yes. Yeah. Still, like, why? Just freaking move the whole airport there if that's what you need.
Right. Okay, so now there's more art that is terrifying, ominous, unsettling that has added to these conspiracies, and I'm going to share a couple of them. There are a set of bronze gargoyles installed in the baggage claim, and they look terrifying. Not only are they creepy, but they are also symbols of the New World Order. So leaning into the secret organization, the secret government that is existing under the airport or perhaps is running the airport, I don't know. Of course, DIA has an answer for this. They have said that gargoyles are believed to protect buildings and that they were installed here to, one, protect the building and also protect people's luggage and the safe arrival of their luggage.
That makes sense. I mean, gargoyles have been around for a very long time.
Very long time.
There's buildings in Vermont with gargoyles on top. They're creepy, but, you know, it does exist.
I think it's just the combination of all the creepy art, and it's like they don't all go together, but they're all in their own way very odd and creepy.
Right. And also it is interesting. I feel like a lot of airports have art installations and they cycle through. It's curious that with all of this kind of feedback and backlash that could be viewed as negative or carrying suspicions, that they haven't just changed out the artwork.
But wouldn't that be more suspicious? And then also they've paid artists to make it. Like, they're like, hey, sorry, we commissioned you to do this and now never mind.
Well, I mean, they went $2 billion over budget. What's another few?
True.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars to swap out some art.
So for the 24th anniversary of the airport, DIA commissioned and installed another gargoyle that looks just like the others. But when you approach it, it comes to life and it will interact. It will communicate with you. It will answer questions. It fully speaks with you. There's so many videos online where you
are
can.
Are you kidding me?
So if you want to watch videos, you can. I mean, that one's kind of fun. I feel like that's playful.
Yeah, that one is fun. But it's like, I mean, think about how many people were scarred watching The Wizard of Oz and those flying monkeys. And I feel like this is just everybody's nightmare come to life at the Denver airport.
There's also another conspiracy. So in Steven Spielberg's 1977 Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the aliens in the movie relay a series of coordinates to the humans about where there will be an alien landing. There is a belief that when you plug these coordinates into a map, it is exactly on top of DIA airport.
Okay, so in the movie then we weren't actually given the coordinates because we could look that up. It's wrong.
I was like a belief.
We would know the coordinates.
No, we do have the coordinates and it's actually 51 miles northwest of the airport.
Mm.
And so it's one of those things where like, when people lean into that conspiracy and it's like, you know, it's not true, but people for some reason are like, it still is right there. And it's like, no, it's 51 miles northwest. Like that's far.
Although I will say if all of these tunnels go, like, is this on the path to NORAD? You know, because we are already saying that these tunnels go hundreds of miles. Could this tunnel be connecting to that site?
No, I think Colorado Springs is south of Denver.
It's hard. It's like conspiracy theory on conspiracy theory. But then there's some things that don't quite make sense. But then it's like, well, what do we even know? You know, like we don't even have that much information. It's so much theorizing. Like we could say something and then be like, oh, well, that's wrong. But then what if it's actually right?
Yeah. Colorado Springs is south. So basically, I think this is just one of those things that because there's so much art and alien-like references in the airport. Someone probably like looked at the coordinates and it was like, oh my gosh, this is so close to the airport, and just like tied it all together when it doesn't actually.
Yeah, okay.
The last major conspiracy is one that you made a nod to, Corinne. It is that of Blucifer, a blue Lucifer, a satanic symbol that stands just outside of the airport and greets you as you enter or leave.
Feels like it taunts you. It's like, come on in and we take your soul.
It is horrifying. It is sad to say that about someone's art, but it is also a murderer. It has killed.
Jeez. And also, again, to your point, it's not the same artist doing all of these things. They're all separate different artists mm-hmm. doing these really aggressively dark sort of art, which a lot is. But again, it's like where's the light? Where's the good stuff?
Right. So this again leans into the conspiracy that DIA airport and art is predicting the apocalypse. It's also leaning into this theory that there's a curse. There's also leaning into the theory of the Illuminati, or that there mm-hmm. is some satanic ritual practices happening beneath the airport. So when you approach DIA airport by car, you are greeted by a massive blue horse with glowing red eyes bucking upwards, standing on its rear legs. We'll insert a photo here so you can see just how scary and unsettling it is. This sculpture is not only unsettling in appearance and has glowing red eyes, it is also murdered before. So this piece was actually commissioned by the airport in 1993, and they had hired artist Luis Jimenez to create a piece to stand at the entrance to the airport. The project was titled Blue Mustang, and it was delivered, guess how many years behind schedule?
I'm going to guess 6.
13. It was also lavishly over budget, and it cost $650,000, and the artist, his life.
Mm. Also, the fact that they even waited 13 years, I feel like that, to me, is a conspiracy in and of itself, because it's like, why wait for it? What's the importance? What's the necessary? Why is this so necessary to have this one instead of just moving on to another piece and being like, oh, okay, well, sorry.
Maybe they had already paid him. Blue Mustang is 32 feet tall and 9,000 pounds. The artist sought to create a sculpture that embodied power and could start a dialogue that no matter what background you came from, the sight and scale of it would be striking and imposing. It was meant to represent the wild and powerful spirit of the American West. It was massive, a blue Mustang with glowing red eyes that represented leading the herd through harsh weather. As the artist was finishing the sculpture, the rear section became unhinged, fell atop the 65-year-old artist, crushed his leg, and severed his femoral artery, killing him almost instantly.
Oh my God, that's horrific.
So basically, he had finished it, and he was assembling it, and it killed him.
Oh, I hate that. This also just feels so like Illuminati-esque, where it's like, you know, the celebrity lives out their contract, and then they die. This guy did what he was supposed to do, and then he's killed. Maybe that's why he was waiting so long. He knew something was up and he was dreading finishing it. And so he kept waiting and waiting and waiting, trying to buy himself some time.
If I put on my tinfoil hat, there's a part of me that he knew too much. And so they had to kill him. And they said that his art did it.
Oh, I don't like that.
Anyway, it is really tragic and it is devastating. But this already completed artwork was then delivered and erected outside of DIA posthumously. And it immediately sparked controversy because the structure is the furthest thing from welcoming. We'll put the photo back up here again because it's just not, it's not something that is like, ooh, I can't wait to fly somewhere now. It's more of like, wait a second, did I just see that right? What was that?
Yeah. It almost feels like if you swapped out the eyes with white eyes and maybe you added to the structure, you know, like there's another horse or there's a couple men trying to like wrangle the horse in their old Western getup. Like it would be more clear what it is meant to represent. But instead you just see this giant horse on its hind legs with like glowing red eyes. Just, and it's not right outside the airport. It's a little bit of a drive between where that is and then driving the road into your gate.
Yes, definitely. It's like the entryway into the greater landscape that is the airport
property.
So basically it sparked controversy because people were like, one, this is not welcoming whatsoever. And two, it killed the artist. Like, how is this like something positive and welcoming to people who are coming to the airport?
Yeah.
People didn't like it, but also it's art. Art is supposed to spark conversation. So in that regard, the artist was successful. Apparently the red eyes do not symbolize Satan and the fourth horseman of the apocalypse. It was paying homage to the artist's father, who apparently in his own art worked with neon light.
Okay. Can we change the color of the eyes?
I mean, I think it would be really unfair to do that to an artist who has since passed away to change his art.
I know.
Because then it's no longer his. Over time, legends and lore of Blucifer have spread. There was one man who like started telling his kids that once a day, Blucifer would like shoot lasers out of his eyes and make one vehicle a day vanish, vaporize it.
I would be horrified. That's one way to never have your kids ever travel with you. You're like, I don't want to take them to Disney World. I'll just make them so fearful of the airport that we can never go.
You don't want to get vaporized by Blucifer, do you?
No.
So others say it is possessed or that it is an omen of death and that if you tried to remove it, you would be struck dead. So, you know, all of these legends and lores have circulated around it now that people are like, well, we wouldn't dare remove it because what if something bad happens to us?
Mm-hmm.
It's also 9,000 pounds. That thing is not easy to remove. Others say it is haunted by the spirit of the artist. But you know what? There are also other hauntings in the airport. There are rumors of graves that were uncovered during construction, and this land was Native American land prior to white settlement and colonization. I believe that. This is a massive property.
Yeah. Well, and also for a structure that was created from the outside architecturally to respect the native people of this land. I'm surprised to hear that if they did find people, that there is no sort of memorial or something set up to honor the actual bodies that were there.
Rumors.
I don't know.
There are also stories of security guards reporting strange drumming and music and chanting coming from areas of the airport that are either uninhabited, closed, locked for the evening, or even from the land itself. And there's no source. There is a man named Mark Cox who wrote an article in 2019, and he wrote of his own haunting encounter. Apparently, during construction of DIA, Mark was a security guard, and he occasionally patrolled the construction site where there had several mobile home park like setups for like offices. And at night, they were all empty. But there was one evening where Mark saw a man walk into one of those mobile home offices and he pulls up his car and he goes to investigate. He's like, someone might just be working late, but I'm going to go check. He walks into this mobile home office.
Yeah, like an annex. Yeah.
Like the annex, yeah. And searches the whole entire premises. Searches the premises. Also, he noted that as he approached the office, there were a set of footprints that he was kind of following in.
Wow.
He goes in. There's no one in there. There's only one entrance and exit, and it's the door that he came in through and that he could see the entire time he's in there because it's a really small space. So he's very confused. He's like, okay, maybe I saw something that's strange. But like, he knows he saw the footprints. As he's leaving, the only footprints that exist are his.
Okay, that's bizarre. Because again, that's like a paranormal trickery where it's like, here are the footprints for you to follow just to get you in here, but they never actually existed. They only exist in your own vision, in your own world that we're creating for you in this moment.
And I don't know, I have no evidence of this and I couldn't find any information on it, but wonder if anyone died during the construction of the airport. Like, not to say that they're unsafe, but construction is a dangerous job and there are hazards with it regardless. So I'm curious if there were any fatalities during the construction of it, or if there were spirits that occupied this land who were very curious about what was going on. I'm not sure. There are stories of hauntings similar to that. And also think about how many people are traveling in this airport a day, like, and bringing their own ghosts, their own hauntings, their own things. How do you decipher what is a ghost and what is a real human?
That's what I was just thinking. Like, how many spirits do we see in malls, in airports, at concerts mm-hmm. that we just assume is another person passing by us?
We just don't know. Yeah. Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S., including Corinne and I? I mean, we have gotten so many different plants from there. I have a coffee bean plant. You have lemon trees.
And I just got 4 variations of blueberry bushes, and I planted them in pots on my deck this past weekend. And one of them's already flowering, which means I'm going to have blueberries this year.
Oh my gosh. I mean, they literally have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. And you can find the perfect fit for your climate and space. What I really appreciate is that they have experts online that you can communicate with and message. And they have a 24/7 growing and care advice available. So if you're like, I really want blueberry bushes, but I have no idea how to help take care of them, they have experts that can help you.
And Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code TGOG at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code TGOG at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code TGOG. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply.
So, in conclusion of this episode, the conspiracy theories have spanned 2+ decades since DIA first opened. There's the belief curse, the fact that the building seemed to employ mystic symbolism, and that it had numerous construction issues that to this day continue, which is why they have those posters that say takes really big drills to get to the underworld.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of odd art and architecture, and it has all in combination with one another contributed to the paranoia and budding conspiracies. There are a couple things that we can be certain of, and we can talk about those, and then we can digest. So one, there was clearly a significant mismanagement of funds and construction delegation. Whoever was in charge of the artwork definitely had a strange fascination with the macabre, or maybe their own agenda that they were trying to facilitate. Lucifer is terrifying, and despite its good intentions, it murdered its own creator, which to me is sus, capital S-U-S. 4, the conspiracies circling DIA were further spread when TV host Jesse Ventura featured it on his TV show, Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura, and that aired on January 13th, 2012. It was the season one finale, and Jesse Ventura shared all these conspiracies of Denver International Airport and the theory that the artwork depicted a roadmap to the apocalypse. And once that aired, it truly just like opened the floodgates for all different types of conspiracy theorists and like Reddit forums and, you know, internet groups kind of ganging up and adding to one another's conspiracies.
Mm-hmm.
5, and finally, if the airport and its backers have spent decades and billions of dollars hiding secret global infrastructure and secret agencies, why would they jeopardize it putting so much evidence and like leaning into it?
Right. Well, it reminds me of another sign that we saw at the airport where it was like, sorry for the delay, the lizard people keep stealing our tools.
Yeah, yes, because they 100% are leaning into it. And even the current CEO, Kim Day, he is like out loud and admittedly said, like, I'm going to lean into this and leverage all of these conspiracies as free marketing for the airport. They, I think in the last couple of years, they do like events. They had a screening of Close Encounters of the Third Kind. They had a alien themed like Halloween party. They even opened an exhibit in the Jepson terminal that it's called Conspiracy Theories Uncovered, and they feature videos, artwork, props, and exhibit more theories and tantalizing, sinister, strange conspiracy theories about the airport. So what do you think?
Oh, it's hard too, because it's like, yeah, they're leaning in. There's all this weirdness, but like Denver's also a weird place. You know, they're the first people to say like, Denver's going to be a little weird. The people are a little weird. We like things that are a little weird. Being weird is okay. So maybe this is one of those examples of them just kind of like really leaning into that weirdness. It's strange for all of these things to be piled on top of one another and for it to be associated with an airport. Like, I guess if it were another type of structure, I would be curious, but an airport, because of how much access it has to so many different types of people, and there's airplanes, like things are always happening and coming and going, and it feels like the perfect place to kind of like cloak certain activity because there's so much hustle and bustle. It makes me suspicious.
Okay, but let me ask if you can get behind my theory.
Okay.
My theory is that there is something being hidden beneath or within DIA, but not all of the things that are being said, but maybe perhaps one thing. Maybe, like I was saying earlier, like all these conspiracies added on top of each other are like a distraction to the one thing that is true. If you put so many different conspiracies, it's more likely that people are like, okay, that there's no way all of that exists there. It's probably not true. If there were one thing that were true, I would believe there is an underground bunker for a potential end of days, or that these tunnels lead to something. That, to me, is the most believable.
I agree with you there. But then on the flip side, too, I'm like, well, why would you choose an airport, which is such an easy target, especially given the influx of people, like the volume of people that they see every day being what you said is like the third most traveled in the world or something like that. There's so much risk associated with having that many people, that many airplanes, just that much access to that area. Like, why would you put like a seed bank in like the Empire State Building? That doesn't make sense.
Sure, unless like it, like you said, it is a selfless act and it is like a caring for humanity. And if something were to happen, they could usher travelers in the airport into an underground bunker for safety.
Yeah, I hope that's the case. Maybe they know something that we don't, like that lizard people or these weird alien creatures that will come and murder all of us one day, like those creatures from A Quiet Place, that they are maybe scared of horses. Maybe they hate fire. Gargoyles are the actual only predator that they have in the natural world. And so it's like all of these things to help save the airport from attack from these creatures. There's another conspiracy.
I mean, this is why we need our tinfoil hats, because we're building on top of the existing conspiracies.
I agree. Wow. Denver Airport. You know what? I'm so glad you covered it, because there are so many conspiracies. And I feel like when we were on tour, even now, like one of my friends was asking that I was just with this past weekend, and they were like, what did you think of the Denver airport? Because they knew that we went everywhere. And they're like, did you go to Denver? And I said, yes. And they said, what did you think of the airport? Because it is such a, it's just so confusing, and it is kind of freaky and scary, and there's no.
Like, it's one thing if this type of art is in a museum, because I think we're used to going into a museum and seeing art and like dissecting it and understanding it. So in my mind, it's like, okay, why can't we view an airport as a museum-like place? Because I'm sure if you go through the airport, not every single piece has this like unsettling, strange, apocalyptic, satanic, alien, intergalactic theme to it.
Yeah.
But because these are notably odd, they're the ones we hear about. And if it was in a different space with less controversy also attached to it, would we even think anything of it?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It just feels so bizarre for an airport, is really the thing.
We should do a poll on our socials. Vote what you think is happening at DIA. We'll give you like three options. We'll say like secret government, like underground bunker, aliens, and then you two have lost it. We need to get you help. We're not alone in it.
Let us know. We're definitely not alone in it. I also, I just hated Denver Airport. I'm going to be honest.
It was weird. It's a weird vibe.
No, yeah, not only was it weird, I understand that it's under construction. So like the way that we moved about the airport may not be like the end result of how they intend for people to move through. But I thought it was one of the most difficult journeys through an airport I've ever had. It was so confusing. Me and a whole other group of people kept asking like, where are we supposed to go? What are we supposed to do? It was absolutely packed. It was so fucking confusing. And I have traveled internationally a lot and have had a much easier time finding my way through an airport where there's literally no signs in English than I did traveling just trying to find TSA pre-check at the Denver airport. It was like, do 60 laps and then it will magically appear. And I'm like, okay. I hated that airport.
My least favorite airport is Newark, New Jersey airport. It is just, every time I've been there, it's under construction. And I travel there so much because it's where I fly into for my family.
Yeah.
Well, LA is so bad too. I don't know. Airports are just...
There was one airport that I really loved and I can't remember what it was. It was like a very small town, small city sort of airport. I feel like they had like 12 gates and I loved it, but I can't remember what it was.
I do love a small airport.
Yeah.
I really think they should, and you and I talked about this when we were on tour, they should have workout studios in airports.
They should.
I mean, you have to be there 2 hours before your flight.
Yeah.
And I hate just sitting there. I would love to just... You're all checked in. You're ready to go. You do an hour workout and then you board your flight.
Yeah. Go to 30-minute power abs.
Exactly.
Do I think it's a great idea? I do. Would I ever do it? Absolutely not.
I would.
I know you would. Okay. When I was searching through our inbox to see if we had any stories from the Denver airport, we surely did, but none of them were actual experiences. It was people just alerting us to the weirdness of the Denver airport, being like, what the fuck is happening here? So appreciate that. But I did find, I found a story from someone who lived or experienced something very creepy around the Denver area.
That's perfect.
Brina, Rinny, Ghost, Countess Leia, Fruit Fly that everyone forgot about. It's your sister from another mister back with another ghouly tale. Also, I love that they memorized our childhood nicknames.
I know, that's
Brina
really
and Rinny.
So cute.
Although I have many a tale of my own to share, this one is actually from a close friend of mine, and it's too spooky, juicy, spajuicy, not to share. He had this encounter at his church, and when he told me, I informed him on just exactly what it was he saw. But I won't give away the story before you get to read it. This story is told entirely from his point of view, so let's jump in, shall we?
Yes.
Okay, so now we're going into his voice. When I was roughly 14 years old, my parents became highly involved with a local non-denominational Christian church outside of Denver in the foothills area heading into the mountains. My father became a deacon in said church after several years of attending. Deacons don't just collect money passing those little plates down the rows during the service. They also form a small committee that, along with the church board of directors, manages budgets, adjusts salaries, etc. This committee met at the church on the first Thursday of every month in the evening, roughly between 6 to 9 p.m. Also, can I just say that I know exactly what this is like because when I was going through like the confirmation process, you have to do like so many hours of service for the church.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how most of my experience being in CCD was me trying to like figure out ways to manipulate them into making them think I'm doing more than I am, but actually me getting away with doing much less. And so I ended
up... Also an important skill in life.
Yes. I ended up giving myself a position where like once a month I would go to these meetings, sit there for the first 15 minutes and tell them what we were doing in CCD and then I would leave. And it counted towards like my entire year's worth of activity. I went like 4 times.
Wow.
Tis a skill. And so, yeah, I understand what these meetings are like.
Mm-hmm.
Thursday is significant because it's notable that there are no other church functions going on, no weekend services or Wednesday night groups. The only people at the church were those there for the meeting on Thursdays, maybe a dozen adults or so. The church was a decently sized congregation, maybe 1,500 people split between 3 weekend services, so it's a fairly large building. It had a big basement that they had dedicated to the youth functions or middle school and high school aged kids. Don't think of a creepy old basement. Think of the lowest level of a modern 4-story church with a walkout, basketball area, pool table, foosball, music stage, etc. I'm thinking of Righteous Gemstones now. That sounds sick.
Oh, that is a great way to, yes. Okay, I'm picturing it now. I'm in.
Anyways, sometimes Dad would take me along on his monthly deacon meetings because some of the other members also had children my age, and I'd come to know them as friends, and they would come, and then we would all hang out in the basement, we would talk, we'd play video games, whatever, while the parents were all upstairs in their meeting. So one Thursday in late autumn, Dad takes me with him to the meeting. It was raining hard, and it was really cold outside. The meetings were another floor up, and there weren't direct stairs inside to get there from the basement. So you had to go outside around the side of the building to go back up the stairs and then back inside. Point being, the basement was pretty far away from where the other people, the only other people, were in this big building. And this particular Thursday, only one other parent in the committee had brought their son. The lead pastor brought his son, Ron, with him. And I knew Ron pretty well. We were friends. And so we just chilled in the basement while the parents did their meeting deal for a few hours. We were the only two kids there, being around 15 years old or so, and none of the other adults upstairs had any children that were younger than us. They had kids in high school or older, but none had brought their children this night besides Ron's dad, the lead pastor. Ron and I played pool for a while, and then we decided to just go to the little side room that was filled with couches and just hang and eat snacks and talk. Besides its regular interior doorway, this room had a glass double door leading directly outside to a little covered area with breaker boxes, electric switches, and the like for the whole church. I'd rarely seen the room's exterior doors open. They were usually locked. And it was certainly not the youth basement's main entry slash exit. So we're in this small living room sized area, hanging out on the couches, bitching about 10th grade stuff to each other. And again, it's like late November, pouring rain outside, dark, cold, probably 40 degrees, and it's around 9 p.m. We're sitting there talking when suddenly this boy runs up to the outside of the glass through the double doors, yelling and screaming for us to let him in. He's soaking wet. He's wearing jeans and a hoodie. He has really dark hair. He looks maybe like he's 7-ish years old. And he's yelling all frantic, looking over his shoulder like he'd been chased there, yanking with all of his might on the door handles, pounding on the glass. Let me in, please. You gotta let me in. And Ron and I were confused because we'd never seen him before and we didn't have a key to unlock the side door. So we yelled back through the doors, go around to the front. These doors don't open. He calmed down his frantic yelling and pounding and pulling for just a few seconds. And he looked at us. His eyes were jet black. The whites, the irises, the pupils, all of them jet black. There was exterior lights that went on at night, so it wasn't a dimly lit area at all. We could see his eyes perfectly. Ron and I noticed this. We gave each other a what the fuck kind of look. And then without warning, the little boy ran off into the rain. Never laid eyes on him again in my life. Maybe 30 seconds or so later, after the kid ran away, something inexplicable happened. One of the two glass doors that the kid had been yelling and pounding on and pulling on closed. We watched it physically shut about 3 inches and then latch closed. Ron and I hadn't paid attention to it until the kid ran up and we hadn't noticed that it was even open a tiny bit. So the kid had been yanking with all of his might on a door that was slightly ajar that would have easily swung open with that amount of force.
My God.
We were weirded out, but we did go out the regular exit of the basement and look around and yelled hello a few times just in case the kid really was in trouble or anything like that. But nothing outside besides rain and darkness.
Oh, brr, cold, chill, ooh, shivers.
I know. It also just started raining too.
Oh,
as we're telling
this. Spooky.
Fast forward 15 years later, I'm 30, casually talking about some spooky things that happened with me and my friend. And then in parentheses, the person who sent us the email said, that's me, guys. I'm the friend. I told her the backstory above and was shocked to learn about black-eyed children. Didn't know that was a thing. I was telling her the story, and the minute I said black eyes, she was like, oh shit, you've actually seen one? You didn't let it in, did you? Without any need for me to finish the story besides the door closing shut. Without a doubt, black-eyed children do exist, and they always want you mysteriously to let them in. And they cannot enter until you invite them in. I thought my story was creepy most of my adult life, but I sure didn't know thousands of people around the world have seen these things. And most of the stories, they really do match up with mine. Several closing things I think are creepy in retrospect, besides the obvious about my story.
Yeah, because everything about it's creepy.
Yeah. The room's exit doors of the church are located directly underneath an enormous, like 50 foot tall by 30 foot across exterior white cross, and lets those passing below on Interstate 70 know that the building is a church. Where would something evil try to go if it were trying to invade a church or if the church had pissed it off? Some doors in a basement under a cross sound pretty appealing. Also, I thought it was strange that Ron, the pastor's son, was with me. Ron's dad had performed a handful of what his father only described as demonic exorcisms. So maybe something was trying to get back at him personally through his family. Anyway, that's my 100% true story of my encounter with a black-eyed child. They are real. And then the person who sent us the email, Gabriella, said, thank you for listening to this Tales from the Crypt-like story. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did when my friend told me. I'll be sending more stories your way. Until then, stay spooky. Keep giving us listeners the opportunity to live in a cycle of endless Halloween. Cheers, Gabriella.
Our podcast is basically Halloween Town. It's Halloween It is. It's very interesting because not only are black-eyed kids horrifying, but like the added layer of this black-eyed children appearing at a church is so interesting. And I'm like, okay, did it target the Gabriella's friend and Ron, the son, because they were like more isolated, just the two of them, and it felt like it had more of a chance to get let inside?
Yeah.
But also, I don't know, if I'm a kid, like a black-eyed kid, I'd almost want to appeal to the parents because there's parents up there that like, then they have two kids downstairs. Like, what if they for a moment thought it was their kid and they're like, oh my gosh, we absolutely need to let you in.
Right. Or something happened with their children too, where they're like, right. Holy shit, is someone in trouble? That's a
good
thing.
One thing we do know about BEK is that they are not the most intelligent and not the most up-to-date in terms of lingo.
Well, and also they had the opportunity to be let in. The kids literally said, go around to the other door. If they had just gone around to the other door, it's very likely this person and their friend Ron would have opened the door and let this kid in. Although at that point, they'd already seen the black eyes. So I'm not so sure they would have done it so willingly.
But they did kind
of
like
one of those things where you're, that's true. Right. Just in case there was something.
And also the door was open. The door was open. The door
that's
was banging
the
on it.
Thing. It's like this child is yanking on the door that's already open. And then the fact that after he ran away, the black-eyed child, that the door just slowly closed and latched closed. Like I'm picturing it like a deadbolt locking too.
That makes me think of like a good spirit though. Like some protective, like, holy spirit, pun intended.
Someone else is protecting like, ooh, them. Let's close this.
But then it makes me wonder, like, how BEK interact with the three-dimensional world, because similar to vampires, they can't come in unless you let them in. Does that mean they also can't interact with the space in the same way? Like, it's making the noise, and it seems like it's pulling and tugging, but clearly it isn't interacting with it in the way that we would interact with it. Because if it's slightly open, a tugging and pulling or pushing, whatever, would open the door.
I also feel like we are missing a part of this story, and it is from Ron and his dad. Because what if this kid was just basically a witness, like what he was saying in his theory, which was, you know, Ron's dad had been a part of certain exorcisms. Perhaps this was a way to kind of like try to get to him through his son. I am curious if in that moment, Ron thought like, oh shit, this is the kid that I've seen before, or like if he had any feelings and was just so scared that he didn't want to seem too weird in front of his friend, so he didn't actually like explain what was going on.
Yeah,
but I wonder if he knew, if he understood exactly what this was.
I want stories from Ron's dad who's performed exorcisms. Like that would be gnarly.
I know.
If anyone knows a pastor who has performed exorcisms, or a priest, or anything, or if you've performed an exorcism, can you please email it to us and let us know? Please. And if you are a lizard person living beneath DIA's Denver International Airport, please email us.
Yeah, let us know what's happening. You can email us at twogirlsoneghostpodcast@gmail.com. While you're busying yourself typing out those stories, you can also rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you listen, and you can tell other people about our podcast. Not only does that give you some inner circle to be able to chat ghost stories with, but it also immensely helps our podcast in terms of growth. And with growth, we collect more and more ghost stories, and that's what we all want here.
And we collect more of you.
Enough of us to take over Denver Airport.
Hell yeah. Well, thank you. Also join us on Patreon, where if you would like to get episodes 1 week early and ad-free and get a bonus episode every month and participate in our quarterly book club and join us weekly for live campfire stories and so many more things, join us there. We have one tier. You get all of those benefits for $5 a month. And you can follow us on social media and hang out. Tell us ghost stories.
Hang.
Be our friend.
We're glad you're here. Thank you to all of you for joining us. Thank you to Jamie Ryan, who edits our audio and video for the podcast. And we will
see you on the other side.
Very spooky.